Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Birds of prey, a term that conjures up the African desert and a flock of vultures circling some unfortunate, lost, and very thirsty wanderer. Closer to home, you may think of hawks soaring above fields, countrysides, and cities. They're graceful, strong, and are at the top of their food chain. They are also frequent victims of the close interface of wildlife and man. Altercations with cars, high voltage lines, and toxins have all taken their toll on these magnificent birds. Why are they important to our ecosystem? What can we do to protect their lives and their habitats? My guest today is Dr. William Ferrier. He is the Senior Clinical Veterinarian of Campus Veterinary Services at the University of California at Davis. We'll be right back after this short message.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Pawfume Dog Grooming and Finishing Spray is proud to be a new sponsor of Pet Life Radio. Pawfume Super Long Lasting Sprays are available in four unique fragrances. Each Pawfume spray is fortified with the finest conditioners and detanglers to make combing out your dog more fun. Pawfume retails for only $2 per 6-ounce bottle. Pawfume is available nationwide at all Dollar General and Family Dollar stores. Why pay more to have your dog smell great? Pawfume, Pawfume.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No. To my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's Obehave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Ferrier, thank you so much for being with us. I went to Davis, and I actually had a chance to work at the Raptor Center for a little bit, and these birds are magnificent. But well, is birds of prey and raptors really one and the same term?
Well, they are. And by the way, Bernadine, thank you so much for having me. I feel like a celebrity being on your show here. Birds of prey are birds, of course, which hunt for food primarily on the wing, and they have their keen sense of vision, which helps them. And the one of the things that defines these birds is their sharp talons and their strong curved beak, which allows them to capture their prey.
Now, if I remember correctly, they can be pretty much teeny-weeny little birds up to a huge, what is vulture, one of the largest raptors that are out there?
Probably the California condor in North America would be the largest one. And so you're correct. There's a large range of birds, from the very small kestrel, which would be a falcon and the smallest falcon, all the way up to the large eagles and vultures. And, of course, the vultures and the condors search for dead prey. And these birds can be highly specialized. For example, the fish eagle or the osprey, which dives down into lakes and oceans and catches fish and then is able to make their way out of the water and up into the air where they can dine on their catch.
You see some of these internet photos of the birds going into the water and catching a fish. So they really, truly do this.
Absolutely. In fact, I was up at Eagle Lake, California, earlier last week, and I was able to watch a bald eagle submerge itself in the lake and actually catch a diving duck. We also see the eagles at Eagle Lake catching the Eagle Lake trout and coming up with it, and there's a large population of offspring there. It's a remarkable thing to watch them do it.
I had an opportunity to be in Alaska a couple times and seen eagles up there. They are just beautiful. My daughter lives in Montana, and out in the not-so-citified areas, there's nesting eagles everywhere. So it sounds as though, yes, you can go to some place like Eagle Lake, but where else can we run into these raptors?
Raptors in general, you know, you can find them along the freeway, even in Los Angeles. One of the birds that I always like to watch for in metropolitan areas is the red-shouldered hawk. And the red-shouldered hawk is about the size of a crow, and as the name implies, it's got red shoulders, and that helps you identify the bird. But they're able to make a living on a very small piece of real estate. So they'll find a little grassy area, maybe on the side of the freeway, and they'll sit there very quietly waiting for a mouse or something to run across their vision, and they have very sharp eyes that allows them to focus on small movements, and they can focus on that and then go down with these sharp talons and capture the mouse or the rat or whatever their intended prey is.
Since I live in a very suburban area, many of my clients are concerned. They have, you know, the small cat, or they have the little poodlet that weighs maybe all of 5 pounds. And they're concerned that, oh, you know, if I let it outside, the hawks are going to come and take it away. Is there any reality to that?
It can happen. It absolutely can happen. And, you know, you have to understand that these animals are at the top of their food chain, as you mentioned earlier in your introductory, and they don't distinguish between someone's pet and a wild jackrabbit, for example, if there's an eagle. So if the bird is large enough such that the pet is about the right size for the prey species that those birds naturally go after, it's a possibility that a pet could succumb to one of these birds. But as a general rule, these birds are aloof. They don't like hunting adjacent to areas where there's a lot of human activity. They prefer to be away from humans. There are exceptions to that, and they migrate through Los Angeles all the time during the winter on their way down to wintering grounds, you know, in Southern California and in Mexico. So there is a presence in the metropolitan area.
I do like bird watching, and I lived in an area where I had multiple feeders and there were some large trees close to it. And I had put out my little bird seed, and all my little brown dicky birds were out there eating away in the sparrows and finches and such. And every once in a while I'd notice, there's no birds. Everything's really quiet. What happened? And I don't know if it was a red tail or a red shoulder, but there's a hawk in the trees just going, thank you so much for putting out the little buffet for me.
You know, and typically the bird that is the culprit that likes to catch small passerine birds at the bird feeders is called the Cooper hawk. And the Cooper hawk is what we call a short-winged hawk. The genus is Accipiter. And interestingly enough, the UC Davis Media Group did a short presentation on that a few years ago, where they interviewed me and a local resident who had that exact same observation. There was a Cooper hawk that was coming in and catching the birds in her backyard in the middle of the city. And, you know, was able to use that opportunity of the birds congregating around the bird feeder to catch its food. With the sipiters, they're a little bit different than these red-tailed hawks, for example, that you see soaring around that are very visible. Cooper hawks like to hunt by being secretive and being in the deep branches of a tree where they're not seen. And they'll sit very, very still, and they'll wait for bird movement. And at that opportune time, these birds have a tremendous speed with their short wings and real fast wing beats where they're able to sustain that for a short period of time. And so they'll basically catch their prey by surprising them, and it happens, and this is just part of Mother Nature.
I felt badly, you know, that I was setting up these little birds in one respect, but, you know, I know it's part of the circle of life, and they need to eat, so maybe I'm helping one of the larger birds survive. But I was surprised, exactly as you're saying, because here's a bird in all these branches. Like, why doesn't it break a wing? But you've explained why.
Yeah, they have long tails and short wings, and they are just experts at diving down through, you know, wooded areas. And that's typically where they live, but they migrate down through the cities here in California and throughout North America in the late fall.
I live in an area, again, that has fair amount of wildlife roaming around the suburbs, so I'll always explain to my clients, when you have a small dog or a cat, let them stay in the house at night because a coyote or something's going to get them. But a dog, and even a small dog, the same concern. So I remember being outside one time, being the good pet owner, and standing there as my little Chihuahua Pomeranian mix Juanita went potty, and I'm standing there quietly at night, and I see this thing flying at me, and it's like, whoa, and moved and realized it was a barn owl who must have seen Juanita and thought, this might be a bunny, something we can eat. So are owls considered raptors?
Absolutely. And a few neat things about owls is that their flight is silent. And if you think about it for a moment, if they're going to catch a mouse at night, they want to be able to sneak up on it without being heard, because the mouse also has very keen hearing. And so the feathers on owls are sort of serrated at the end, and it allows sort of a fluffy end on the wingtips, and so the bird's flight is silent, and it's able to catch its prey without being heard.
And you're right, it was absolutely silent. I just saw this white thing coming at me, and it was the owl. So it was just kind of neat in one respect to see this, because here I am in a city, and there was this marvelous bird. Dr. Ferrier, with all the various fields in veterinary medicine, how did you get into raptor medicine?
Oh, great question. You know, I've been involved with raptors most of my adult career, and it all started really as a hobby. I'm a falconer as a hobby. And so back years ago, there were not a lot of veterinarians around that understood how to deliver medical care to raptors. And I developed an interest in it and started reading about it, and that really was the deciding factor for me to send me into veterinary medicine. And I ended up coming to UC Davis and studying avian science and took a master's degree in avian physiology before I went on to veterinary school.
So here was a hobby that turned into a career. I love it.
You're mentioning falconry.
I think if people think of falconry, maybe if they know anything about it, you know, in my mind, I almost envision an Arab sheikh out in the desert with this bird of prey on their arm and sending it out after pigeons or whatever. Is that what falconry really is?
Well, sort of. You know, years ago, in ancient times, falconry was really the sport of noblemen, and it was only the wealthy that practiced it. And now, of course, common people like myself can practice falconry, particularly here in North America. But what the definition of falconry is, hunting wild quarry with a trained raptor. And so I use a peregrine falcon for hunting, and my preference is to hunt wild ducks, and it's an alternative to some people hunt ducks with a shotgun. And so my preference is to hunt them with a peregrine falcon, and the duck is the natural prey for peregrine falcons. And a lot of times, most of the time, as a matter of fact, the duck doesn't get caught, and the falcon learns from it, and the ducks learn from it. And what it does for me is it allows me to get very close to nature and watch this interaction between the prey and the raptor. And very few people get that opportunity to observe that up front and personal.
Dr. Ferrier, a lot of people would be opposed to hunting in any form, but here you're using a bird that is a wild animal going after its natural prey. Do you allow the bird to, number one, eat the prey after it's caught that wild duck? And number two, how do you train a bird that's a wild animal to leave your arm and then come back to it?
So the answer to the first question is that I absolutely let the raptor, the peregrine in this case, have the duck as its meal, and this is something that they do, you know, naturally in the wild, and I'm not fond of duck. And so as a result of that, anything that my bird catches is a meal for the bird, and they get to keep it, and I don't take it from them. To train them, there's two different types of falconry. There's a type of falconry that is usually practiced with hawks, where the bird leaves the fist, and if you walk through a field, you see a prey, and then the hawk leaves the fist and flies out and goes after it. With falcons, we train the falcons to fly really high in the air, and that's, in fact, the name peregrine means wanderer. They wander around at very high elevations looking for unsuspecting prey down on earth, and then they stoop down at about 275 miles an hour to capture their prey. And so what we do is baby steps. The bird is on the perch. And by the way, most of these raptors now are bred in captivity, by the way, for falconry. They're not taken from the wild. But the bird may be on a perch, and you have a treat, and you blow a whistle, and the bird steps up onto the fist and gets a treat. And they learn very quickly that they get a meal when they come to you. And then you, from that one step, you basically take it further and further and further until they're flying, 100 yards or so to you. And with the falcons, we teach them to fly to a little leather bag called a lure. And then from there, we teach the bird that they get this reward if they fly high and close to the falconer. And so those are kind of the steps that we take. And it's a very time-consuming process. It takes a tremendous amount of time to train one of these birds properly. And my wife considers my falcons as my mistresses.
But okay, a mistress that thankfully is not going to be one that should break up a marriage. But
no, not in my case. We've been happily married for 32 years.
Congratulations. I love this. And I can imagine with these birds flying so high, so fast, every once in a while they run into things like those high voltage wires that can really be deadly to them. I'd love to investigate this when we take a short little break and come on back. So this is the Pet Doctor. I'm Dr. Bernadine Cruz. We're right now chatting with Dr. Bill Ferrier about falcons and the effects that they've had on his soul of having this bird as a mistress. We'll be back after this short message.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Give your dog some thought with Dog Thoughts. It's the iPhone application that everyone's talking about.
What do you think of this? A man in Davis, California says he's invented an application for the iPhone that claims it can read your dog's mind. Huh? No, it's true. I read about it on my cat's Twitter page. That's why.
Jay Leno talked about it, CBS reported on it, and now you can see what all the buzz is about. Created just for dog lovers, Dog Thoughts makes taking photos of your furry best friend more fun. Shake your dog and read his mind. On your iPhone, of course. Take a pic of your pup, shake your phone, and watch as his thoughts appear on the screen. Does he have a bone to pick with you, or is he having a tail-wagging day? Get your Dog Thoughts iPhone app today. Just 99 cents. Go to PetLifeRadioPromotions.com. That's PetLifeRadioPromotions.com.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step by step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Salvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
Join us every week on Wings and Things, where you'll find real answers to real questions about everything you want to know about pet birds. Care, feeding, bird products, travel, and more. Everything to make your frequent flyer a happy camper. From parrots to parakeets, cockatiels to cockatoos, you'll have a bird's eye view of everything there is to know about your fun, feathered friends.
We're your hosts, Barbara Heidenreich from Good Bird Inc.
and Robin Schwokas from the Leather Elves.
How do I learn more about my parrots?
Spread your wings and get ready to fly. Wings and Things, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Ferrier, these birds sound wonderful, and I can imagine the amount of time that you have to put into them. And anyone who wants to go into falconry, are there organizations where they can learn how to do this?
Absolutely. In California, there's an organization called the California Hawking Club. If interested people could go to calhawking.org and find them on a national level. We have a group called the North American Falconry Association. In fact, I chair their conservation committee, and I'm also a director of the California Hawking Club. And so we have programs to help people learn about falconry and explains the steps that they have to take to become a falconer. But we're going to have to point out here, both as we talk about the rehabilitation of the wild raptor resource and also touch on the subject of falconry, raptors are not pets, and they never should be kept a pet. So if the listeners came across a sick or injured bird or even a baby that fledged from the nest, it's illegal for them to keep the bird, number one. And falconers have special permits and licenses that they go through to legally keep them. But falcon birds are not pets, and it's really critical that the listeners understand that if they do find a baby that has fledged from the nest, that they don't keep it, that they contact the proper authorities and have the bird taken care of properly.
When I was at UC Davis and working with these wild raptors, I knew one of the things that we needed to be very careful of, besides their beak, which was strong and powerful, were the talons. So if somebody were to find an injured bird, how can they safely capture it to move it to someone, or should they leave it alone? What should they do?
Good question. And first, we have to determine whether the bird really needs help or not. And the most common example I can think of this would be a barn owl, which has fled from a nest and is in the vicinity of the nest. The parent will continue to care for the barn owl and feed it and take care of it until the bird is strong enough to fly and make a living on its own. In situations like that, a time to intervene would be if the bird is not flighted, cannot fly, and is on the ground in a situation where they could become harmed by another predator, for example, a cat or a dog or some wild animal. You talked about coyotes earlier, and that's a possibility as well. And so in those cases, or in the case of an adult raptor that has been injured, you mentioned electrocution injuries with them, and you know, this is one of the things that the California Raptor Center does, is cares for these birds that have been impacted by mankind. And so my best recommendation is to contact experienced animal handlers. And some examples of that would be animal control services, for example. And most counties have an animal control agency that will come and assist in that situation. In the United States, the various fish and game departments, or also known as Department of Natural Resources, in every state has mechanisms to go out and help individuals with injured wildlife that they may encounter. In the worst case scenario, if help could not be obtained and the bird did have to be catched, You do, as you mentioned, have to be very careful about the talons and the beak, and removing the stress on the bird is critical. And one thing that can be done to do that is to lay a towel or a large blanket over them, remove that visual stimulation, wearing gloves and safety glasses in a large cardboard box, and try to coax the bird carefully into the box, and then close the box and make sure there's ventilation holes, and then transport the bird as you can to either a local veterinary clinic. There are a lot of veterinary clinics around the nation that will help people with wildlife. They work closely with the various wildlife rehabilitation centers. And then if you're in Northern California, we've got the California Raptor Center here at UC Davis to help.
What are some of the treatments that you can do for these birds? You know, broken wings. I remember there were veterinarians who actually tried to fix wings. Can you give us an example of, say, a bird that really sticks out on your mind that was injured, and could you release it afterwards?
My favorite story was actually the story of the bird that we have at the Raptor Center that was not able to be released. And that bird's name is Thor, T-H-O-R, and Thor is a ferruginous hawk. And Thor actually was struck by a freight train in Winnemucca, Nevada.
Oh, my goodness.
The bird was stuck to the grill of the freight train on its travels west up over the Sierra Nevada Mountains. The train stopped in Truckee, and when they got out, lo and behold, they discovered this ferruginous hawk essentially glued to the grill of this freight train. They realized that the bird was alive, took it to a local veterinary clinic in Truckee, California, and the veterinarian stabilized the bird and then sent the bird over to UC Davis. And the bird, Thor, had a severely broken wing, and a lot of times these things can be repaired. And the School of Veterinary Medicine donates the veterinary care for these birds that supports the California Raptor Center, and they, of course, do a remarkable job, both plates and pins, just like would be done on a dog or a cat or a human for that matter, to repair broken bones. And there's a little bit more rehabilitation involved with these birds, particularly if it's a wing that has been fractured. But in Thor's case, the injuries were too severe to allow him to recuperate and go back into the wild, and so we've maintained Thor as an educational bird. And at the Raptor Center, education is a very important thing that we provide to the community in terms of not only veterinary students that learn about caring for raptors, but undergraduate and graduate students at the university, a whole slew of community volunteers that we have that help the Raptor Center. And one of the things that excites me the most is the K-12 program that our volunteer docents essentially run that teaches children about the importance of raptors in our ecosystem.
Perfect segue. So they really are important to our ecosystem. It's not just something pretty to look at. How do they affect our ecosystem?
Well, they're at the top of the food chain. And so, you know, from that standpoint, they're going to be exposed to all of the same toxins and pesticides and all of these things that humans are. The best case in point that I can give you in that regard would be the peregrine falcons, which once upon a time was nearly extinct from the state of California. And that was the result of DDT. What happened there was the DDT was sprayed as an insecticide. The small birds were eating the treated insects. And then, of course, the peregrine falcons were catching some of those birds. And as you go up the food chain, that pesticide gets concentrated to the point in peregrines where it caused a thinning of the eggshell. And so they essentially became sterile. The eggshell would break when the falcon would lay on the egg. And so young could not hatch, and the numbers significantly decreased. So we have these birds at the top of the food chain, and from a human standpoint, what they really are is a biological indicator of the health of our environment.
If our birds are healthy, then we can be healthy. Now, was that the situation with the California condor?
With the California condors, and actually the Wildlife Health Center here at UC Davis is investigating quite a bit of what happened with the California condor. With them, early on, they were shot. You know, there was a tremendous number of California condors that were shot by individuals that, you know, they're easy victims to hit because they're so large. But in addition to that, lead toxicity was something that affected the condor because they would ingest the lead in the prey that they would find and the carrion that they would find. And as a result of that, that dramatically influenced the population of California condors.
Dr. Ferrier, in between my junior and senior year at UC Davis, I had the opportunity to do an externship at the Los Angeles Zoo. And at the time, they had a breeding program for condors. Do they really help repopulate this condor, or not even the condor, but the raptor population in the world, or the United States at least?
The breeding projects have had a profound effect on that. And one interesting bit of information about that: the peregrine falcon probably was one of the biggest success stories in taking a bird in North America, where, and I'm talking specifically here about the United States, because the bird was doing fine up in Canada and up in Alaska, but the peregrine falcon was on the verge of extinction, and it was falconers who took their birds that they had in captivity together and pioneered falcon breeding, and then at their own expense bred these birds and released them back into the wild, and it was a total success story. And so we use falconers in raptor breeding facilities. We'll use techniques such as artificial insemination, and there's a whole slew of techniques that are used where the eggs can be, when they're laid by the falcon can be encouraged to lay multiple eggs, more than they normally would in the wild, so-called double clutching is what it's called, and then those eggs can be artificially incubated and then put under surrogate parents and let the surrogate parents, a raptor that is in captivity, actually raise the birds so that they imprint to self and not to human. And then the bird can be released into the wild and it will breed naturally.
So falconry, people think, again, you know, here are these terrible people going out killing ducks and other birds of that or the normal prey. But here's a group that really helped save birds that they are just impassioned about.
Absolutely. And at Cornell University, Tom Cade, who was sort of the father of raptor breeding, is a falconer.
I love it.
Pat Reddick, who runs the largest raptor center in North America that I know of, University of Minnesota Raptor Center, and has done a tremendous amount of work for the wild raptor resource, is also a falconer.
With all of these people involved with falconry and knowing that too many of these magnificent raptors are being impacted, that must be very expensive to try and rehabilitate them and get them back into the wild. How are most of these programs being funded?
Well, I think that most of the raptor centers that I'm aware of are funded through donations from the community. And in the particular case of the California Raptor Center, we do get a small amount of money from the state to help support our program. And remember that theoretically the state is responsible for the wild animal resource, and so it's a natural thing for them to some degree to help support our activities in terms of caring for these birds. But with the state cutbacks, you know, our budget is significantly affected by that. And so we have been relying more and more on donations from the community to help us keep the doors open.
And if somebody said, you know, maybe I'll never be a falconer, but I love watching these birds soar, where can they donate?
Well, the California Raptor Center would be a wonderful place to donate, and we would appreciate having any help whatsoever. And I think we have a link to our website with your website, and we would just appreciate any help that the public would like to give us.
Well, I think I've learned a tremendous amount today, and hopefully the listeners have also. So it really is important. Our healthy birds help to show that we have a healthy environment. A healthy environment equals a healthy person also. So Dr. Ferrier, thank you so much for being with us today. I love learning all about these birds, and it makes me want to go out and go into some of the fields around here and just sit there quietly and see what's up in the sky. So you've been listening today to Dr. Bernadine Cruz with the Pet Doctor and Dr. Bill Ferrier of the California Raptor Center. If you ever have questions about a bird that you see, that you find, ask your local veterinarian, or in this case, maybe even animal control. Hopefully you've learned a little bit of how to keep yourself healthy and your pets healthy. Please tune back in next week when we'll be having more great information, things to keep your pet in the best of condition. I'm Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Thank you so much for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.